I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
We started to project weakness when Afghanistan fell, that ugly surrender to the Taliban. That's what it was, a surrender. But the Gold Star families, 13 service men and women killed by a suicide bomber. We'll have the sniper who had the suicide bomber in his sights, asked for permission to engage, and was denied that permission. There was a call for an airstrike against ISIS-K, which, by the way, came out of Bagram when that prison was released. Denied access to engage in the airstrike. What's so sad for these parents is it could have been prevented, and their child is dead now.
Yeah, that is unfortunately the sad fact of how Joe Biden extricated us from Afghanistan. Sloppy would be a polite way of saying it. Deadly is more accurate. And one of those service members killed by a suicide bomber from the St. Louis area, Jason Schmitz, Marine. There were 11 Marines, one Army sergeant, and one Navy medic. All killed because of the way we had set things up for them. We could not have done better. We could not have done better if you wanted to kill Americans and take some of our most daring, brave, young, yet to give Americans and slaughter them the way we did it. And I will, to every day I think of it, when I hear the question that got asked of our commander-in-chief, but the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Austin, what, do you regret anything? No, I don't. You don't regret anything? God, I would have loved to have that question with him. Because that would have been my response. You don't regret anything? You don't regret losing those Americans? Oh, well, yeah, that I do. Well, that's part of the issue. And you did lose them. You set them up to die. We ask a lot of our military and their families. And nowadays, it's a volunteer effort. We don't draft as we used to. They're there because they wanted to be. No one wanted to volunteer to go die, but they volunteered to serve their country as needed. And while I'm speaking about it, I don't want you to always think of war, the casualties of our military. You know, well, it didn't happen actually in war. It's a training exercise. We had a chopper go down the other day, killing some, injuring others. That is, again, serving our country. They were doing their duty and their assignment at the time, and something went wrong, and they were killed. I will never forget one, I have no idea who the young man was. I never knew him before and certainly never had reason to know later because we were not in a position to find out. But he crawled into a hole he thought would be safe and there was a mortar shell planted there and it blew him up. I mean, explosions were everywhere. And so you couldn't tell anything, but you heard the scream briefly. Still didn't know what had happened until much later. And, of course, there are men and women out there that have seen and survived a lot more in total combat conditions. But training is always dangerous for anyone in the military. But I'm afraid sometimes what happens with the general public is they kind of dismiss it because it wasn't actually in a war zone, war action. You don't get it if that's your attitude. You don't get it and understand that they're training to go do their duty, and they're killed before they get there. You don't get it that they were assigned to watch over an embassy outpost. They got run over by militants, and the blame shifting started. Well, it's got to be blamed on that Hollywood producer, thousands upon thousands of miles away, because he did a film that was antagonizing those who didn't like the way he portrayed Allah. Forgetting and ignoring that the actual date it went down was an anniversary date of 9/11. But as Hillary Clinton claimed, what the hell difference does it make now anyway? Would she have said the same thing if it had been her daughter? If Chelsea had been there in the ambassador's house, that outpost that day, would she have said the same thing? I like to think she wouldn't have. I don't know. I obviously can't tell you. But I also want to remind you, when it came to the Afghan pullout, Trump had already decided we were going to pull out. So a decision was made and in place to pull out. But he had conditions. We were going to pull out in an agreement that the Trump administration had with the Taliban, because we had signed a U.S.-Taliban deal in Doha, Qatar, or Qatar, if that's your pronunciation. But it stipulated fighting restrictions, and it provided for withdrawing all NATO heroes, or forces, I should say, from Afghan in return for the Taliban's counterterrorism commitments to cease fighting and creating more terror. The Trump administration deal was to go down in May, but it could be delayed if they did not meet certain criteria. So we began withdrawing some forces, but we were not going to commit to take everyone out. But then, of course, the issue began because Trump loses the election. You want to say stolen from him? Go ahead. I'm not going to sue you. The government might come after you because you can't say that. You can't say the election was stolen from you. Unless you're Stacey Abrams or even Hillary Clinton or others like that. But then the Biden administration decided to absolutely pull out, because already the Taliban was deciding, you know, Trump's not in control anymore. What the hell? Well, then we'll do what we want. Who's going to stop us now? Biden? Biden? No, of course not. So, when we started under the Biden administration, we had, according to the best reports I can find, 2,500 troops still in country. Downrange, as sometimes we refer. 2,500. That was already after he had, back in 2021, in that August, withdrawn about 3,000, or said that they would be deployed to Kabul Airport to evacuate embassy personnel, U.S. nationals, and the special immigrant visa applicants. Those are the ones that in Afghanistan who had worked with our forces for 20 years, serving as interpreter and other things to help our forces, and probably saved a lot of lives, American lives, in the process. So we're going to make sure we get them out. But then the Taliban began to take over various territories, and they were falling like crazy. And this administration and its leadership thought, well, we didn't think they'd fall that quickly. Are you that much of an idiot, really? And then the decision was made, and the last military planes left Kabul Airport outside the city. Kabul strongly reinforced, well protected if we had our troops there. Flew out at 11:59 p.m. time, Kabul time, August 30, 2021. And the next day, the slaughter began. And we had all of these guys rushing to the only airport to get out of town. Then it was in the middle of the city, Karzai International. And we had maybe 600 troops still on the ground to help defend that airport. And hordes. Thousands upon thousands are trying to get through and over the fences to get on the tarmac and maybe get onto a plane. And if they couldn't get on with it, maybe they could grab the hold of it as it took off and get out of the area. They didn't. They fell to their death. But then on September and later, I should say, every one of these, the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, U.S. Central Commander Frank McKenzie, were among those who appeared before Congress and testified that U.S. senior military officials had stated, in fact, that maybe we should keep some troops in Afghanistan, but the way we pulled out overnight, we left our troops and the Taliban ready to attack anyone and everyone. But let me take you back again just to brief history. It was back in July of 2017 when we had, at that time, 8,400 troops in Afghanistan. Trump gave the U.S. military decision-making authority to increase troop numbers for military operations in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan without seeking full formal approval if they felt the need. They wanted to protect our Americans who were there. He said, our decision will have a clear definition, eliminating ISIL, or ISIS as it were, crushing out Qaeda, and preventing the Taliban from taking over the country and stopping mass terror. Biden administration was, move out. Leave them to as close as you can come to the killing fields of Cambodia after we pulled out of South Vietnam. I want you to hear a moment from a question that got raised as you were listening in the beginning of the segment to Texas Congressman McCall talking about the Afghan investigation. We also have Florida Congressman Corey Mills saying, I asked a question.
Lloyd Austin is ultimately responsible as the Secretary of Defense for any of the actions that take place within the Department of Defense. We know that he tried to claim that there was no credible intel that would actually have led and or prevented the incident that occurred. Now, I've had the privilege of going into the skiff, into a secure area, and actually reading the intel documents that tell a very different story. The bottom line is that there was not only credible intel, but then you had the 23 diplomats who had signed the State Department dissent cables that was also available to this administration. When you look at his inability to get status of forces agreements, when you look at his inability to protect the commanders, the officers, and the soldiers abroad when it came to the Afghan withdrawal, it's a very clear dereliction of duty. And I've asked Secretary Austin very clearly, can you be removed for a dereliction of duty? He said yes. I explained to him the crime and asked if that would have been something for a removal offense by the officer in one of our hearings. He said yes. What he didn't realize is that I was referring and talking about him, not about another commander.
Ah, that might have changed the issue entirely, wouldn't it? Good question. Good trap question. So coming up, how are the latest and continuing indictments against Trump affecting his presidential race? Let's begin with the angry reaction of Senator Ted Cruz.
This is disgraceful. Our country is over 200 years old. We have never once, ever once indicted a leading candidate for president. And this is Joe Biden, and this is the Democrats weaponizing the justice system because they're afraid of the voters. Every time more bad news comes out about Hunter Biden or Joe Biden, you can set a stopwatch within hours. Some clown goes and indicts Donald Trump again.
That's right. Some clown suddenly reindicts him. But looking at any of the latest polls, they're not showing any damage to his race, to his primary race and the numbers he holds. There's nothing that shows that it's affecting him. If, in fact, anything, it's probably making him stronger. And that mugshot that they were so anxious to get, that Fannie Mae says, oh, I'm going to get a mugshot of that guy. She's got to be seeing that in her nightmares now. Because did they expect Trump to appear in his mugshot? Oh, woe is me, and a tear in the corner of his eye. The man looks fierce, does he not? Now, again, you don't like Trump? That's your prerogative. But do you think it's right? Do you think it's fair that a political candidate going into such a race can be hammered left and right on charges basically to tie him up going into the election? Do you think it's fair that the order for such an investigation is carried out by the very administration he's trying to unseat? It's no longer a banana republic. It's looking like a monkey republic. Coming up, according to Al Gore, you, the earth, should be dead by now. There's, to use the title of his own global warming film, an inconvenient truth about being dead and the earth being dead now. We'll get into that. But at the same time, Biden climate envoy John Kerry, oh, he continues to trumpet on behalf of Al Gore. And they both have lined their pockets with tons of money, selling the snake oil of climate change. We're going to get into it. It's all coming up before the world ends. I want you to be able to hear it. We're going to hear it. We'll get done before the world ends. Lock and load. Ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Unfortunately, we have people around the world who are proselytizing lies and distortions and non-scientific information. The disinformation is a problem for us. It's really costly, it's very dangerous, and it's wrong.
Extreme events around the world made worse by climate change suggest he is right. Some now worried existing targets are not achievable.
You know what? Those remarks by John Kerry, our Biden energy czar, followed by the report who's carrying the reporter who's basically carrying water for him, is a perfect combination of idiocy. He said, we can't stand a lot of people, they just don't believe. They put out fake news, and we can't stand that. It's not helping us. It's making our world more dangerous because we allow fake stories to be put out. And right behind his remarks, I'm going to have to concede something here. Let me double check before I admit it. I don't want to admit to anything I didn't do. Hang on a second. I did edit her remark immediately behind him. Because he went on and blah, 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 and I could care less about the blah, blah, blah. So I will admit I edited what she had to say right behind him talking about we can't deal with fake news and fake stuff like this. And then she says, yes, but we're doing it basically, and according to her, the chance of getting zero is not maybe going to be achievable. And she mentioned the extreme events around the world are showing how bad our climate is getting. Here's my point of why I put those two close together. The video, when she is speaking and talking about extreme climate events around the world, she was showing the devastation in Maui. That was not a climate issue. I thought we didn't want to have fake stories. I thought the fake stuff was damaging. The so-called inconvenient truth, as Al Gore proclaimed with his money and his book and his film. Well, there's your inconvenient truth in this story. John Kerry saying, we can't deal with these people like this. Well, can we play that again, Quentin? Now you have the setup. He's going to make his remarks, and right behind him, I have edited. I'm acknowledging. I pulled the response of the reporter and put her right behind him in butting the two together. But when she's talking about climate events and disaster, what we're seeing, they're showing pictures of Maui.
Unfortunately, we have people around the world who are proselytizing lies and distortions and non-scientific information. The disinformation is a problem for us. It's really costly, it's very dangerous, and it's wrong.
Extreme events around the world made worse by climate change suggest he is right. Some now worried existing targets are not achievable.
And the extreme events around the world are Maui. That was not a climate change issue. I just gave you some behind the scenes of what can be done to change the intent of a story. My intent was not to change it, but to reflect on what Kerry said. I did take out some words. It was blah, 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 as far as I was concerned. And you could say, well, you were maliciously editing. I could have let him go on for another 20-plus seconds before I got to that particular response from her, but I didn't see the need to. And I'd like to think with my decades in this business, my editing did not change the context nor the meaning of it. But let's say I'm going to accept you claiming, oh, you changed it, you changed it. Yeah, I didn't change her words. I didn't change the pictures she was showing, claiming it was climate change that caused Maui. And then, of course, you've got John Kerry falling back on what he's been pushing around for a while. And we've done this before, but I think it's important sometimes to go back to some things and reinforce them. Because, believe it or not, there are some, I know it's hard to believe, there are actually some who don't listen to Larry Connors USA. Shame on them. We're going to start putting a mark on their forehead to show that they're not listening. But in this case, he has been after the farming community for more than a few years.
Agriculture contributes about 33% of all the emissions of the world, depending a little bit on how you count it, but it's anywhere from 26 to 33. And we can't get to net zero. We don't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution. But with a growing population on the planet, we just crossed the threshold of 8 billion fellow citizens around the world. We just crossed that in this last year. Emissions from the food system alone are projected to cause another half a degree of warming by mid-century on the current course that we are today. A 2-degree future could result in an additional 600 million people not getting enough to eat.
But you don't want farming. And keep in mind, he said it accounts for 33% of emissions. So you get rid of all farming, there's still just around 70% of emissions existing. But we also don't have to worry about those 600 plus additional people. They'll be dead anyway because they won't have anything to eat. We're going to produce it all in a lab, probably the Chinese lab. We'll go back to Wuhan and say, can you produce us some food we can eat and share with everybody? Good luck with that.
You just can't continue to both warm the planet while also expecting to feed it. Doesn't work. So we have to reduce emissions from the food system to keep the 1.5 degrees alive. Why do we have to keep 1.5 degrees alive? Because scientists, as a basis of physics and mathematics, not ideology and politics or party labels or anything else, as a matter of physics and mathematics and some biology and chemistry have told us these are the consequences. And we already see it happening. And almost everything they've predicted for 30 plus years now is coming true. But the problem is it's coming true faster and bigger than was in fact predicted.
No, it's not coming true faster and so forth, because if you had believed John, not John Kerry, but if you had believed the remarks from Al Gore, we would already be dead. Let me go back to Al Gore very quickly. A 2009 comment by the former vice president, the North Pole would be ice-free by summer 2013, went viral, but then they were saying he didn't really say that. That was made up. They didn't do it right. They're spreading disinformation on the right. And then on the other side, one said, the left is spreading climate misinformation. Well, in an interview with the Times, one of the other scientists, not being cited by Kerry there, said, my numbers got misquoted. He said, they were claiming that 75% chance of the entire northern polar ice cap would be completely ice-free in the next 5 to 7 years. That was back in 2009. And according to this scientist, it's unclear to me how this figure was arrived at. I never tried to estimate anything that exact. He said that 75% figure that Al Gore was using was a ballpark figure I had in a conversation with the vice president, several years before he made the remark. So then Gore made several statements in the late 2000s about ice melting during summer months due to climate change. There came the inconvenient truth in 2006, and in 2007, he gets a Nobel Peace Prize. And saying one study estimate, it'd be the ice cap would be completely gone during the summer in less than 22 years. That was 2007. Gore did not actually predict the North Pole would be ice-free, but he mischaracterized others' findings and made a range of statements with various predictions. That would be calling covering your butt. But back to John Kerry and our food and warming. I'm sorry where he did that. I apologize. I got sidetracked. That's my fault, Quentin. Thank you. But what we did have John Kerry admit in his interview, yeah, we're going to have to still have fossil fuels.
There will be drilling. We are drilling too. Others are, because there's a certain demand that is built into our economies right now.
Is new extraction necessary, though?
When you say new extraction, do you have to continue to pump? Yes, you do. Do you need to explore and go out and lease new leaseholds? I doubt it if you're doing the other things that you need to do. We do not have the time or space for business as usual.
But we don't also have what you want for the future. You call this an interim stage, but we don't have enough to go all electric. Vehicles and so forth. The grid couldn't handle it. There aren't enough vehicles. The ones that are there way too costly and they catch fire, so forth and so on. And he admits, yeah, we still need to have it. But he means mainly so I can get jet fuel for my jet. Because the day they shut that down, he won't be able to get on his jet and fly all over the place. Coming up, we got some breaking news regarding a member of Joe Biden's lawyer's counsel office meeting with a member of the special counsel Jack Smith's team. Now, what do you think was going there? We're going to begin with Senator Grassley condemning every effort to slow down and block the investigation of Hunter Biden. Allen Outdoor Solutions knows what you want. An oasis, a place at your home to relax, enjoy, entertain. Allen Outdoor Solutions can design and build your oasis. A spacious stone patio, different levels, maybe a fireplace, flowing water. See their quality work at AllenOutdoorSTL.com. AllenOutdoorSTL.com or call 314-647-4800. AllenOutdoorSTL.com. This is a scary time when it comes to your money, especially if buying a home. That's why you need Homestead Financial Mortgage. I know the owners, met the team. You can trust Homestead will be with you every step of the way. Call 24/7 with any question or concern. Homestead is on your schedule, not banker's hours. This is not just about buying a home. It's about trust. You can go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. Larry.homesteadfinancial.com. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit. And if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beal has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Well, they used to make a living off a bathtub gin. When the hippie showed up, weed was in. Well, they profit off of weakness and they always have. Now meth is a recipe for cold hard cash. Something's cooking and it just ain't right.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
What I'm about to tell you sounds like it's out of some fiction spy thriller, but it actually happened, and it happened in our own government. in the past few years, I've never seen so much effort from the FBI, the partisan media, and some of my Democrat colleagues to interfere with and undermine very legitimate congressional inquiries.
There was a Senator Grassley of Iowa talking about how colleagues, by that he means other senators, read that Democrat senators and maybe some Republican senators, are not doing a good job of really wanting, much less helping, to know really any ties between Hunter Biden and foreign governments, and therefore any ties between Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and foreign governments. They don't want to know. They're not doing anything to help. They're doing everything they can to put up a roadblock and slow it down, back it off. Well, we now have word that a meeting took place between a deputy chief of staff for the White House counsel's office and a top aide to special counsel Jack Smith. I give you the names. I'm going to give you the names just because they might end up meaning something before it's over with. The deputy chief of staff of the White House counsel's office, Caroline Sabo, and Jay Bratt is the aide to special counsel Jack Smith. So you've got a chief of staff, deputy chief of staff of the White House, a lawyer, meeting with a lawyer who also works with special counsel Jack Smith. Were they meeting just talk about, hey, you want to go on a date? Do you like figs? Do you like prosciutto? I mean, what do you think they were talking about? The question obviously is, what are they doing, again, to influence or interfere the Department of Injustice investigation into Joe Biden? And maybe what they're also doing to firm up any investigation and information they've got on Donald Trump. That meeting, by the way, took place March 31. We're just coming out. March 31. It did also include an FBI agent from the Washington field office, Danielle Ray. These, according to visitor logs, the New York Post just put up. That was March 31. 9 weeks later, June 8, Trump is indicted by Jack Smith. But of course, the logs, just so that they met, doesn't say what they discussed. What do you think they discussed? Grassley continued his attack on how this investigation is being stopped, thwarted, and trying an effort to derail it.
The most recent example of this triad at work are efforts against my and Senator Johnson's ongoing Biden family investigation. That investigation started on August 14th, 2019, when I was chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, with a letter that I wrote to the Treasury Department. My letter was about a questionable financial transaction subject to the Committee on Foreign Investment that related to a matter involving the Biden family. As our investigation continued and advanced, Democratic leadership and partisan media began their attack on our investigation.
And they've been doing it. And they continue to do it. But of course, when it comes to Trump, all hands on deck, full steam ahead. And the U.S. District Judge overseeing Trump's federal case, alleging that he attempted to overturn the 2020 election results. She made a decision yesterday. She denied Trump's legal team request to push it back to spring 2026. So he's not getting any special attention other than the special attention we're going to give him. The judge said the public has a right to prompt an efficient resolution of this matter. And deciding setting a trial date does not depend and should not depend on the defendant's personal and professional obligations. Mr. Trump, like any defendant, will have to make the trial date work regardless of his schedule. Senator J.D. Vance, Republican of Ohio, who did endorse Trump for the Republican presidential nomination, quickly slammed that as a straight-up election interference. Now, if you want to break it down for a moment, yes, everyone, I don't care what your job is, how important you think you are, if you're standing trial and they set the trial date, unless they can get a continuance by your attorneys for whatever cause, that's going to be the trial date. But here's the other part of that story. She set the election date for March 4, 2024, the day before Super Tuesday, so they can do everything they can to keep Trump in court that day, and it won't keep him from voting, obviously. And it's going on the day before the Super Tuesday. But they have a reason to do it that way, and you know what the reason is. Still trying to muddy the water with the Trump name. You won't get anywhere near this. He's radioactive. You get near him, you might be pulled in as well. Well, Senator Grassley is getting more than a little PO'd over this.
On July 13th, 2020, then Minority Leader Schumer, Senator Warner, then Speaker Pelosi, and then Chairman Schiff sent a letter with a classified attachment to the FBI. That letter expressed a purported belief that Congress was the subject of a foreign disinformation campaign. The letter was targeted at the Johnson-Grassley investigation. However, the classified attachment included unclassified element that attempted and failed to tie our work to a Russian agent named Andrei Derkach. Unsurprisingly, those unclassified elements were leaked to the press to support a false campaign accusing Senator Johnson of me of relying on material from a Russian agent and thus advancing Russian disinformation.
You remember that happening. You remember how they were trying to discredit Johnson, Senators Johnson and Grassley, before all this other stuff broke free and we began to get a better picture. But I want you to go back and hear that again, because they've been playing this game over and over again. Wash, rinse, repeat. Wash, rinse, repeat. Over and over again. And they think if they do it enough that you'll get tired, or you'll simply buy into the story and you won't argue anymore. So it must be good. Well, they've also got to deal with this. There's a new survey out. Over three-quarters of Americans surveyed say Biden is too old for a second term. Over 75% of Americans say he's too old. 69% of Democrats surveyed, if you want to break it out, say he's too old to serve. That's an Associated Press survey. All right, let's turn our attention to the craziness that's going on in our nation right now. Let's begin with Chicago. I'm going to do this because my boots on the ground in Chicago sent this to me, and he said, these numbers are staggering. And I looked at them, and I thought, you're absolutely right. I don't have time to spend on all the article, but this was written by City News, a publication inside Chicago, written by the Director of Fiscal and Economic Research at the Illinois Policy Institute, billed as a nonpartisan research organization. Listen to these numbers. Oh, I love it. It begins by pointing out Governor Pritzker returned to Illinois last month, fresh from a United Kingdom tour designed to drum up business and attract new investment. But, here come the facts. He points out during the past decade, Chicago's commercial property taxes, are you ready for this? Commercial property taxes in Chicago in the last 10 years have jumped 93%. The nation's second highest effective tax rate, more than double the average for the largest cities in each state. San Fran has an effective rate of 1.18%, and the city tax commercial property is at 3.78%. He dealt with a family that was living in, they were a family-owned manufacturing firm, immigrants who were trying to build a new life here. They had COVID, they dealt with that. But they're also looking at the crushing tax burden. Business owners in the north and northwest suburbs of Cook County, Chicago, in the last 20 years have seen a 134% in property taxes. You want the numbers? His went from 12,200 to more than 28,000. How are you going to survive like that? They also point out these commercial property tax rates are contributing to, obviously, office vacancies in Chicago. No kidding. Folks are getting out of there. They point out the city lost 33,000 residents in 2022, second only to New York City. I remember a time I thought I might like to live in Chicago and work there. God had a better plan for me, and thank God he did, because I couldn't see what was on the horizon. This immigrant family that's trying to make a gift, or rather make a go of what they have in the city of Chicago, is quoted, "We love this city, we just need it to love us back." That ain't going to happen. And then when we get to San Francisco, since we mentioned them a moment ago, there's an elementary school in San Francisco Bay that is scheduled what it called a playdate social. It's hosted by the Equity and Inclusion Committee for this elementary school. Equity and Inclusion Community. But it's only for students who are Black, Brown, API, Asian Pacific Islander. White students, other Asian students, I guess, you're not included. Does that help our kids identify and work better together? But again, it's hosted by the Equity and Inclusion Committee. And often, as I've told you, they're really exclusion. And then you've got this restaurant in California, another one in San Fran, telling police officers, you cannot come in here when you're armed. We have now implemented a policy banning armed police from entering our building during folks eating. Why? Well, because the restaurant said people feel safer if you don't come in with your gun. Notice to anyone looking for a new target, if you want to go sniping somewhere, that restaurant is now open and every patron in there. That is lunacy. I pray nothing like that happens. But they just told them, nobody will be here to protect us. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.